everybody. Welcome back to Scared to Death, episode 4. My name is Peter Montwell, and I am a graduate student here at James Madison University in the Psychological Sciences program. And today we're here with a special guest, the Dean of the Graduate School of JMU, Dr. Linda Thomas. Dr. Linda Thomas went to the University of Florida for her bachelor's and master's degree, and then went on to the University of Miami for her law school degree, and then on to Georgia Tech to earn her PhD in architecture and building construction. Dr. Thomas, if you would like to introduce yourself, anything else you would like to add?
Thank you. Sure. So I'm originally from Washington, D.C. I also spent some time in other industries prior to coming to academia. I was in the Navy for a little bit. And I also practiced law and some construction, large construction project management. My PhD draws research from engineering, microbiology, management, economics, and other areas. So it's very interdisciplinary. And I believe this interdisciplinary thinking helped me. It freed up my thinking and allowed me to bring more of myself to the question. So I think that's a little bit more about me that's not so academic.
Awesome. So you mentioned just all the interdisciplinary work you've been doing. What led you to deciding to try to begin working for a graduate school?
Well, graduate school literally changed my life. So I'd done undergraduate studies and did everything my parents told me to do. And I was just sort of going through the motions. And I took one class that had graduate or post-baccalaureate students in it. And we had to do a project. And I was just amazed at the way they were able to think deeply about things and to think about their thinking. And as a person who sometimes lives in my own head, I figured I wanted some of that. I wanted to learn how to do that. And my advisor told me, well, then go to graduate school. And so I did. And it helped me to sort of slow down. I wanted to be there. I wanted to be in the classes that I was in, which was civil engineering. And it helped me to think about my thinking. So since graduate education is so transformational, as it was for me, I've always enjoyed it. I've enjoyed graduate students. I've had the opportunity to start several new graduate programs in the built environment at different universities, Georgia Tech in Atlanta, Stevens Institute of Technology in New Jersey, and others. And so when I came to JMU, which is predominantly undergraduate, I sought ways to get into graduate education, work with graduate students, work with research. And then when the position opened up, I felt obviously it opened up for me. And so I applied for it. So I'm very happy to be in what I consider my element in this job.
That's awesome. So do you have any goals for the JMU Graduate School? Is there anything that you'd like to see within the next, let's say, like 5 years?
Oh, definitely. I've got a strong vision. So currently, although it's changing, many graduate programs are what I call inclusive. Only a select few get in and study, and it's an enigma to the public. My goal is to make graduate education inclusive and open it up, really disrupt graduate education so that it is more accessible to people who have the passion to go deeper. And so in my strategic plan, and we just finished doing a strategic planning exercise, we see ourselves with a more diverse student body, more doctoral programs, more involvement with the new faculty who come to JMU, and more integration across JMU. I believe JMU produces great undergraduate students, and they also deserve to be exposed to graduate education just like I was. And so I think that those are sort of the things that a graduate dean is to be, sort of the intellectual traffic cop of a university, and is supposed to look at graduate courses from the university-wide point of view, and I hope to do the role well and to fill in where we have some gaps, which is STEM. So probably more STEM programs also within the next 5 years.
Interesting. So with your goals for graduate school, have you seen anything where you can relate back to your education coming up? Is there anything where you've been seeing you relate the things you've learned into now, here and now?
I always take the opportunity to talk to PhD students and research students, because research for most people is a trial and error effort. And so I like to tell folks not to give up, and to fail early and fail often, and not be discouraged, because real learning, real creation of new knowledge is not an easy, it's not from point A to point B. It's difficult, it's complex, and it requires you to have resilience, and that you are not alone if you're wondering if you should be in graduate school at all. So, I see people who are like myself, and so I relate to them. One more goal I have that I failed to mention was that we need a lot more international students. I think international students will add a lot to our programs here at JMU.
Yeah, that's very true. You mentioned you had experience in the Navy. Have you brought any of those lessons you've learned there here to JMU so far?
Yeah, in my entire career in academia. So I'm a student of leadership. And many people think that, you know, the military is just a bunch of orders and then people will acquiesce. And that's not true. You have to motivate people in order to lead them. And you have to understand that you're there in service of the people and in service of the mission. And so in everything I do that requires change, it requires my understanding of leadership. And I learned that pretty much from my time in the Navy.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned like how learning is just an active process. So I wanted to ask, how did you first learn about terror management theory?
Well, it's a weird kind of way. So my mother had a stroke about 7 to 8 years ago. And she's a very pragmatic person. And so we started talking about death. And we read some books together while she was not able to get around, although she, I must say, at 90 years old, she has fully recovered from that. Awesome. And so, yeah, we ran across many books, and I ran across the title and thought it was, you know, extremely interesting. And that's reading Sheldon Solomon and his colleague's book, Worm at the Core. And I was hooked. At that point, because it talked about an area that was just totally different from engineering for me. And so I love research, and I was very interested to see how they were able to actually use experimental psychology, you know, theories to test this theory that has apparently was around since the 70s, but no one was able to actually research it in an empirical way. So that's how I found out about it.
Have you ever been able to relate those lessons that you learned into your work in engineering and law?
Well, yeah, mostly through leadership again. Mm-hmm. But also in law and in engineering. So I think terror management begins to explain some extreme behaviors, and extreme is in the eye of the beholder. So if someone does something or has a belief or a very strong belief about something that seems foreign to me, it helps me to sit back, to have some ontological humility and understand that my viewpoint, my worldview is not universal. And people respond to things. They respond to whatever stimuli they have and act in that way. And so it makes me step back and understand, even if I don't understand right away, I know that people come, especially people from different cultures than myself, have a very good reason for their behavior. And so as far as law, I think we could use it to understand extreme behaviors and have a more restorative justice system instead of just something that's punitive that goes by the book as far as sentencing. And in engineering, my area of engineering, which is why mega projects fail, we found that it had a lot less to do with the engineering and the science and a lot more to do with behaviors. And these mega projects, they're over $1 billion US and take a year to build. And are very, very public. Though, at like the Olympics, where I had an opportunity to work in Atlanta, those types of projects tend never to come in on budget. And so there's some folks working on why that is at Oxford, but the literature says that it's behaviors. Many times public officials who are the deciders in these things want to build monuments to themselves, want to sort of be immortal. And so it brings me back to, you know, terror management theory can explain quite a bit in areas that we may not think.
Yeah. Have you ever thought to use terror management theory in your day-to-day life or like have it impact how you've been leading the graduate school here at JMU?
Again, it comes from motivating people and understanding what people need, because that's really, at the end of the day, all a leader does is creates a new vision and aligns people toward that vision and then motivates them when the going gets tough, because change is always tough. And so in the part of motivating people to understand, you know, how they're motivated, understanding that, you know, there's different cultures and people react and behave differently helps me to dig a little deeper and not assume that people are motivated the same way I am.
You mentioned a lot about motivation, so I just wanted to ask, how do you motivate yourself?
Well, I probably have my mother's voice in my head because I had a very strict upbringing, but a very loving one. And I'm happy to have had her. My mother's from Belize, Central America. And so being the daughter of an immigrant, I was always able to step back and to see, you know, how different I was from classmates. And so initially my mother was the motivator because I could not say no, it just wasn't a thing you did. But after having small wins, you know, running and becoming class president or getting an A out of a particularly difficult class, I started to build my own confidence and found that later in life, I didn't really compete against anyone else. I just competed against myself. And so, as I grew, what motivated me changed. So now in my 60s, I am motivating by trying to figure out how much I can do for others, how much good I can do, how much, you know, good I can put out in the world with the years that I have left.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for someone that's looking to find what motivates them?
You have to spend some time with yourself. And that is hard. And that means no screen time, which is very difficult because, I love to figure out, I get the hit that we get when you get a text message also, but it takes a little bit of self-discipline to think your thoughts, writing down, because it's amazing what we learn when we go from our thoughts to writing something down on paper. And this is gonna sound really corny, but asking yourself and writing down the answer, you'd be surprised at the thoughts that come out of your hand when you use it to write. So that's my biggest point is spend time alone, get to know and appreciate who you are alone and do some journaling. I think those three would help you. And reading also, reading about people you admire, you know, a quick biography or so. Things that I guess reading and spending time off the screen are not pretty popular now, but I think you have to do the internal work to figure out what makes you work. Mm-hmm.
Would you have any advice for your past selves in undergrad and graduate school? Just something that you would like to tell them to maybe make your transitions easier or your life easier?
Not necessarily. I mean, I would have told my younger self, hang in there. Don't get too down when you run across difficulty. Give yourself. So there's this concept called integrative thinking that comes out of a professor out of the University of Toronto. And he studied how do people who are innovators, what kinds of thought patterns or behaviors do they have? And one of the things is they allow themselves the time to go through something complex. They don't give up too quickly. And they are always cognizant of what we think now is simply the model of what we know now. It doesn't mean that it is the only thing. It's the be all end all. And so if we see things like that, then problems or complex problems can be solved because you give yourself the opportunity to figure out a different way. They also, integrative thinkers also think to themselves that if someone has to find a solution, why can't it be me? And those habits of thought help you to move on. And I didn't know that at the time. I felt if I couldn't understand something right away, I must not be smart. So I would tell my earlier self, just have some patience, which is easier said than done. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned integrative thinking. And to me, that sounds like something that would be an important part of a successful grad student. Is there any other tips or tricks you would give to others that are looking to have to find success in post-grad degrees?
I'd say don't focus narrowly on what you think you should be doing or what you think you want. Read broadly, get broad experiences, allow yourself to have the experience of a pleasant surprise. So go to a concert in music you know nothing about. Read about something or a culture you know nothing about. You can find yourself in these experiences of being pleasantly surprised. Mm-hmm. As we start to think broader, we start to think better. As we start to see how people solve problems, say in medicine, it makes me a better engineer, or how people solve problems in psychology, it makes me a better engineer. And so seeing it, not being as narrow as we love to teach students to do, but to give yourself more inputs, I think is something I would tell graduate students. Also, realize that this is the only time you're going to be going through this, and enjoy it, because it's really nice for people who love to think that's your job. Your job is simply to think and relax in that and enjoy that.
So last question. When talking about experiencing new things, have you ever found interesting or fun hidden gems here around Harrisonburg?
Yeah, so one of the things my husband and I like to do is we like to travel the globe on our stomachs. So we are very into different cuisines. And Harrisonburg has one of the best markets for international cuisine, or at least for the ingredients. And that is a place called Food Max. And I think it's a hidden gem because people, go to the same sort of supermarkets and you see the same American fare everywhere. But Food Max, they cater to people who have different viewpoints and different cultures. And so that it's almost like going on a little mini vacation when we go there to shop.
Where would Food Max be? Is that down South Main towards Pheasant?
Exactly. Run? Yes.
It is?
Yes.
Okay. I think I know what you're talking about. Yep. I might have to go there now.
Yeah. It's right next to a sewing store.
Okay.
I forget what the sewing store is called, or fabric store, or whatever. But yep, it is definitely a hidden gem.
All right. Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you for joining us and your time today. Is there any closing remarks you'd like to leave the world?
Thank you for having me. This is a very interesting platform, something I've never done before. This will sound really trite, but you know, we need to chill out. We need to understand the beauty that's around us, and seek peace and be instruments of peace ourselves. So if I could say anything, it would be to enjoy what life has given us, because we are a fleeting second in if you think of time from the beginning.
Wow. Thank you so much. That was amazing. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Dr. Thomas, for joining us. And we'll see you all back here in a couple weeks. Thank you.